You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, trade pros, and welcome back to another episode of the Mind Over Markets podcast with your great hosts, myself, Mark Borscht, and
George Papazov.
Welcome back, everybody. And in today's episode, we are going to be discussing something interesting. And this is the concept of a financial thermostat and how your default thermostat setting might actually be holding you back from achieving that trading success that you know you deserve, but you might have not gotten to that point just quite yet. Now, it's no real secret that trading is indistinguishably linked to money. Right? If you think about what initially drew you to this industry, or you might be at that point right now, you might be a new trader looking to get into this industry. And for a majority of those people, you know, we would agree that the allure of making life-changing money is why we're here. Now, as you experience, as you get more experience in this journey, that will change. But at the end of the day, it remains, you know, constant. The fact that trading is linked to money. Right? We spend all of our days fantasizing about what life as a successful trader might look like. You know, the lavish houses. For some people, it's that cushy bank account balance. For others, it might be exotic cars. But at the end of the day, I think the freedom of time and the, you know, the financial freedom that comes along with it to do what you want, whenever you want, is ultimately that end goal. Now, if you've been listening to us for any amount of time, you'll understand that what you want from a logical perspective is those desires. And these are the things, the material things that you want. But what really drives your behaviors and your habits is the subconscious mind. That's what really runs the show. So if your relationship with money is not aligned with your financial goals as a trader, then you will find a way to sabotage yourself and your results. Now, the goal of today's episode is to help you identify, first and foremost, what is a financial thermostat? Then we're going to take it one step further by identifying what your default financial thermostat setting is and how you can adjust it so that you can shake out those beliefs that don't serve you and effectively replace them with ones that do serve you.
I love it, Marky. You know, episode 60, we made it far. Before we go on, I just want to tell you guys, in this episode, we'll be talking about setting your financial goals so your subconscious could take you to your end goal as a result, like Marky mentioned. But it's extremely important to surround yourself with people who not only believe in your financial goals, but help you get them when you run into a challenge. This is the idea of a thermostat. When it's out of range, it activates to help you get back on track where you belong. This is what a trading community could do for your goals and your journey to consistency. Join us today and surround yourself with professional day traders in futures and options, and let us help you achieve your goal and your version of your best self. Check us out at TradeProAcademy.com. Now, back to the show.
So your relationship with money, what's that all about? Now, before we dive into what the financial thermostat is, you know, Georgie kind of skimmed over it there and how to adjust it. As you guys might have been with us for some time, you know that we like to first identify context. Context is super important. And as it relates to this topic, we got to identify what your relationship is with money. Because at the end of the day, every single human being has a certain relationship with money. And for traders, the type of relationship that we have with money is ultimately going to impact the decisions that we make, whether they're going to be, you know, for our best interest or not. So a lot of successful trading actually has to do with planning your next best trade and waiting for market conditions to align so that you can trade your plan. Now, the issue for most people, and I can say from my own personal experience, and I still do struggle with this at times, but the issue for most people is that they are unable to follow that plan successfully, right? Because the going between identifying what your next best trade is and having the patience to wait for that to align, you know, oftentimes in that little interim gray period, that's where you get yourself in trouble. And this is likely to do with your relationship with money. And if you can identify what that is, it can provide some insights into your own trading habits and behaviors. So if you're finding you're having difficulty following your plan, executing based on your plan, and the trades that you're taking, and when you review, you're identifying that those aren't really part of my plan. Those were kind of emotional trading or trades that really shouldn't have been taken. This can ultimately boil down to your relationship with money. It's your relationship with money that's going to drive those behaviors and habits, which is going to lead to the results that your current, or rather lack of results that you're likely achieving. So the unfortunate reality is that if you have an emotionally unstable relationship with money, then regardless of how hard you work, you're going to be setting yourself up for failure as a trader. And this is a thing that few people are ever told when they get into this industry, right? Because it's that allure of making life-changing money. But oftentimes people don't understand why they're working so hard, why they're putting in the time, why they're, you know, putting in the money, the heart, the sweat and tears. I don't know if there's blood involved. I hope not, but some might even have blood involved, and why it doesn't seem to work out. Well, let's see if we can pull back the curtains a little bit here and help you guys kind of bring this to light.
I just have one thing to add here, Mark. This is a cool discussion we're going to have. You know, I think what's important to understand is that even a net losing trader still has winning trades, right? Like, you could be down money and be losing money, bleeding out the account, but you still have winning trades. And so if you could win just one trade, you could win many trades, right? And I think what the problem in this industry is that many times people start out with the expectation of profit, all right? They focus too much on their strategy. They focus too much on finding an indicator, a signal, a system, a person to help them fast track the way to success. But they don't realize that having the fastest car in the world doesn't mean you could drive it at record pace, right? And I think this is what the episode deals with, is that if you aren't accepting, or if you have a financial goal through trading that isn't congruent with your belief system, isn't congruent with where your financial thermostat is set, no matter what you do, how hard you work, your thermostat will bring you back to your goal. And if your financial goal is, you know, logically to make, let's say, $500,000 a year, but inside, deep down, your subconscious believes you're only worth 50, the moment you get on track to make 100,000, think about what this means. The room is cold. So what happens? The thermostat turns on the heat to bring the temperature back up. Same thing will happen to you the second you're on 100,000 pace, but if you got a 50,000 mindset, the thermostat will start dialing you back down to bring you there. So I think it's very important through this episode that you kind of take a moment, detach yourself from trading, and start thinking about what is your financial thermostat, where are you set. And I hope I didn't take a lot of these points. It's just a little like brief introduction, and then we can unpack it and go a little bit deeper. Sorry, Marky.
No, that's a great point. And, you know, we might have front run the notes a little bit, but that's fine. And I think what's important for the audience to really get here, and this is going to take some work from the audience as well, because you have to kind of strip yourself of the ego and of the attachment to the ego at the end of the day, right? Because if you have been doing something for a certain amount of time and you're not getting the results that you want, would it be worth it to maybe, you know, strip that ego, strip away that sense of ego of, oh, I can go at this all by myself. I don't need any help, right? And to really reflect on your own experiences and your own beliefs. And really the way that you're going to get the most value from this episode is to kind of detach from all of that. There's absolutely no judgment in place here. And, you know, just take this based on what your own experiences are, because that's where you're going to get the most amount of value from.
You know, there was one question, Marky, where Azalea used to ask. If you guys remember, Azalea was a former customer support manager at TradePro Academy. She went on to be in the real estate business. And she, one of the things she said, it was really interesting. She would talk to new incoming members in her community, and they would say things like, you know, well, I'm currently taking this course, and I'm currently trading this strategy, and I'm with this product. And then Azalea would ask a very powerful question, and I remember it, and I loved her for it, and I use this question a lot. I used it before, but really the question she would ask is, and how is that working for you, right? And I think at the end of the day, this is a question we could ask ourselves. You know, you don't have to have an Azalea in your life to ask that question. Be like, look, what I'm doing, how is that working for me? And if you aren't satisfied with what you have, you know, then maybe it's time to change some of the actions. And it can be as simple as just changing the temperature. If you're not comfortable at home, change the thermostat. It gets warmer and colder until you are comfortable. And so that's what we're going to work through in this episode.
Exactly. So bringing it back to the relationship with money, if you think about money in its most basic sense, in its most basic form, what is money? It's literally just physical coins, which, you know, are quite rare these days, to be quite honest, or, you know, just paper. It's just paper. It's fiat currency, right? And what money represents to society is value, right? So from a base case, most of us, we don't desire that physical money, right? We don't want to have a whole bunch of paper bills or a whole bunch of physical coins. Maybe if you're looking to get fit, having a whole bunch of physical coins might work as a, you know, as a gym, now that those are closed with COVID. But back to the point, we don't really desire the physical money. We desire the feelings that we believe the money will provide us with. Because we carry, as humans, we carry a huge, an enormous emotional charge around money because of what it represents, right? For some people, it might represent things like social status, you know, security, safety. You know, for some others, it might represent things such as scarcity. For some, it might represent opportunity. For some, it might even represent resentment. So take a moment now to think about your own thoughts and beliefs that come up when you think about money. Is that a topic that you feel like is taboo? Ask yourself, why? How is that working for you? Right? From the opposite angle, if you believe that money is opportunity, you know, it's a tool. Ask yourself why you believe that as well. All right? And so, you know, we've covered this in a number of our previous episodes, but we'll do a quick summary here for you guys. And that summary is that a majority of our beliefs, whether it's the things that we identify with or the values that we have around money, those are formed during the imprint years of our early development, right? This comes up until the age we're around 7 or 8 years old, where we're just subconscious sponges, all right? And we carry the beliefs around throughout our entire lives, unless we work on our own personal development and fix them, right? So most of us aren't really aware why we make the choices that we make about money and wealth. And the reason why is because those are subconscious choices. Those are effectively running on auto drive from the time that you are 7 to 8 years old. And a lot of these values that you carry around as it relates to money will either inhibit you on the path to financial success, or they're going to assist on that journey. And a lot of the beliefs that you hold, those were created in one of three ways. You might have heard something as a child, right? This could be from caregivers, this could be from parents, family, friends. The things that you saw as a child, those will carry on with you, and or specific incidents that you experienced as a child. All right, so see, hear, and experience. Those are the general ways that you develop these beliefs about money, and these are the ones that you carry on with until you either fix them, or, you know, the other unfortunate reality is you carry these until you enter the grave. And so our goal here, you know, first and foremost, before we go into the financial thermostats, is to really drill down this point to get you guys to reflect on your own values and beliefs about money so that we can identify where you sit as it relates to the financial thermostat.
Yeah, you know, this is really, now we're getting deep in the discussion, because I think everyone's relationship with money, you know, it could be complicated at times. I'll give you one thing, you know, in my household. You know, the values that, like you mentioned, Mark, by the things I heard, I saw, the incidents that were experienced, you know, the values that were set for me is that you have to work hard to make money. It's not only that I have to work, but I have to work hard to make money. And hard work isn't fun work most of the time. So, you know, going with those values about money, I had to reverse a lot of them and change them. But I think the one area in my household that helped me with that aspect is that my mom always used to tell me, you could do whatever you want. And so even though the values about money were, you know, to be frank now, like lack mindset values, you know, the main message was you could do whatever you want. And I think that with that mindset where it's like you could get anything, you could do anything as long as you enjoy it, that mindset will eventually bring you money. And I think the people who get there who say, hey, now I have the money, but still have a financial lack mindset, but have an opportunity focus, they get into an interesting situation. Because what do you do then, Mark? You say, hey, you know, I want to have $1 million in my bank account and I'm going to feel rich. So one day you have $1 million in cash and you don't spend a single penny of it. You're like, I want to save this and hoard it for my security. Are you not broke the same way you were before when you didn't have $1 million? Whether you have it or didn't, if you're not spending it, you don't have it. And I think, you know, this is where it's important to have two things that you need to really succeed. I think one is the mindset that you believe things are possible, you know, and then the next thing that'll take you to the next step is a good relationship with money. Because, you know, the worst thing in the world is to do what you love and make some money and then realize it doesn't make you happy because your relationship is off key. So I just want to bring those two points up from my personal experience. You know, I think between money and then the opportunity one, I think it's really sad where there's households where you have lack mindset, money values, and on top of it, you were told that you can't do anything. You know, like you're not going to achieve anything. You're not going to amount to anything. That sucks. Like those people start from behind. We can change it, but a lot of times by the time we realize how to change it, you know, sometimes life runs out on people. And I think that's the message that we want to share with you is we're here to empower you.
Exactly. And, you know, for a majority of the people, I would say that this episode in particular will relate to a majority of the audience, because if you look at, you know, statistics on average incomes, etc., you know, majority of people in, you know, what we consider, and I air quote, developed parts of the world, you know, they're not from what some might call, you know, the $1 million family, if you will, you know, because anybody that comes from a background or a family where there was, you know, their parents had wealth, their parents will have likely instilled those similar values for them. So, you know, if you're at a stage in your journey where you might have somebody that comes from a background where their parents were wealthy, or they grew up with, you know, towards motivation, they grew up with their parents telling them things like, you know, you can achieve anything you want to, and they had the backing to do it, they will believe that. So people that come from that kind of a background typically have a little bit of a easier time with, you know, with the emotions, handling the emotions around trading, because they've already, you know, the values that they believe are aligned with what they're trying to achieve in this industry. However, you know, that being said, the majority of people that do come into trading, they come into it, like we discussed, because of the allure of making life-changing money. So they will have come from, like, you know, like myself, like George, from families that didn't grow up with that much money. And, you know, even in George's case, you know, I had a very similar kind of case. I always grew up, one of the most common things I heard my dad say was money doesn't grow on trees. You know, that being the case, he also instilled the fact that, you know, if you work hard, you can achieve anything you want. So I was able to work through that on my own. But for somebody that might be listening to this episode saying, you know what, money doesn't grow on trees, that's something I always heard in my life. Right, so let me break down how something like that kind of a belief that money doesn't grow on trees kind of manifests itself into your own reality. Right, so just the statement money doesn't grow on trees, it basically relates to scarcity. Right, money doesn't grow on trees. What does that mean? It means that there's probably not enough money to go around. Right, there's never enough money. So As you're growing up, right, you don't question that as a kid because you're just subconscious mind. You haven't developed the conscious aspect of your brain yet. So you accept that as, you know, as a belief, as a valid belief. And that it drives your relationship with money, you know, as you live your life. So hearing things like money doesn't grow on trees or there's never enough money, your default reaction to material things will likely become that of I can't afford it. All right, so money doesn't grow on trees. Anytime you see something material, whether it's price tags, you know, oftentimes as well, I remember growing up and, you know, if my mom might have bought me like a pair of jeans that were, you know, over $50 or something like that, my dad was like, oh, we shouldn't be buying stuff like this. You know, we can get the same thing for cheaper. And the default reaction for me that, you know, I'm still working through is very similar to what I'm explaining, is that, you know, I can't afford it. I have to work on identifying, right? I've gotten to a point where I can kind of identify myself thinking those thoughts, observe it, and then kind of question myself and really release those thoughts. But that takes time, right? And had I not done this personal development work, you know, I'd probably be stuck in that mindset that I can't afford this, I can't do that, I can't achieve anything that I really want. So these kinds of beliefs leave a very, very strong imprint on your psychology, right? Especially if you come in with the idea that money doesn't grow on trees and your default reaction to material things is that you can't afford it. That imprint makes you associate money with fear and pain, right? And in an industry like trading, where you're trying to get successful by risking your hard-earned capital, regardless of whether you make money or not, if you believe that money is scarce, if you believe that there is, you know, limited amounts of money in circulation, especially for you, then this is going to affect your ability to follow the plan.
You know, Mark, this is really important discussion, because you know, two things I want to mention. Number one, we give so much importance to money, but money is, it doesn't grow on trees, but it's made from trees. Like literally the Federal Reserve has a control P button and they can print an unlimited amount of currency. And so why are you allowing your net worth to be dictated by something that by definition is financially abundant to infinity, right? It's like there isn't enough money. There sure is. Ask Jerome Powell. He doesn't agree with that. He can print as much as he needs. And so, you know, I think that this is a human construct. Money is a tool that's used to exchange goods and to give them value. It was never meant to give you value, right? The thing is, you know, at some point, look, there's always been labor and employment, all right? And money was used to dictate labor, but it doesn't mean that that's your cap for value. What you make now is a result of what you've done in the past. What you make tomorrow is a result of what you do today. Therefore, you always have the control to change it, right? And I think that's an important point I want to talk about, money and not being able to afford it. The last thing is, I think it's an amplifier. I think what money really is an amplifier. It's like, what you think, what you feel, what you do, you're going to do it differently. Because I remember me personally, I'll give you a personal story. The way I used to shop when I lived in Scarborough, which is like east end of Toronto, it's kind of like, you know, it's a heavily dense population of immigrants and poverty. Like I don't know how to say it more politically correct than that. And I'd go to a store and say, how much is this? How much is that? How much is this? How much is that? When I heard a number below the one I was looking for, I would purchase the thing. And, you know, it's an interesting mindset to shop that way, because you're accepting what somebody else has valued based on a dollar amount for yourself, right? You don't have any quality control. You're just accepting what's kind of given to you. And, you know, even back then, the way it changed is I would ask some questions first. If you look at consumption habits of extremely successful people, you know, the price obviously isn't something that's a decision maker for them, but they'll start the process like this. Let's say you're getting a jacket. What is this made out of? What seasons could I wear it during? You know, what is the brand? But like, they ask questions, create the value, then ask what the cost is. And because you're asking, they might say $5,000 for this jacket, but you know what? It's worth four for me. And so when we say, you know, successful people, you know, they're cheap, et cetera, it's not that they're cheap, it's that they have a value, right? And they're willing to pay for that value. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you're somebody who shops out there based on price first, you know, this episode is particularly important to you, because that, even though it seems simplistic, translates into a lack mindset in trading, and you're going to lose the money. You might as well buy that $5,000 jacket, because you just blow it out in the market. And, you know, it's just a little human test. I think that's, we all buy stuff. You know, just thought I'd share that with you.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I can say I'm kind of going through this a similar thing right now, you know, with COVID being shut down, and meaning I can't go to my favorite gyms, right? So as a result, I've started to look into replacing the gym with my own home gym, and, you know, building a home gym to what I've always wanted, a dream gym, right? So this has always been something that I've wanted, and now the opportunity has come up. Right. And I'm finding that I'm kind of struggling with the financial thermostat, in the sense that I'm looking at these numbers and I'm like, this is a pretty big sticker price for what I want to put together. But like you alluded to, as far as how wealthy people generally approach purchases, you know, I'm kind of doing something similar. There's sure, you know, there's a lot of places where you can get similar, like, for example, I'm looking for bumper plates. So these are the places that you'll put on the barbells, all right? And so some places you can get a decent set for a cheap amount, right? But when you kind of do your due diligence, you know, I'm looking at refund policies, how these guys, how these companies handle returns, exchanges, etc. And oftentimes, the better price that you can get, the less value you get as far as customer service. Whereas, right, you know, the bigger companies, sure, the sticker price might be a little bit more expensive, but you get the, you get the reputation from the brand. You know, you can see reviews from people that have previously bought. They've got good reviews. You can see the refund policies are different. And yeah, it might be, in this case, a couple thousand dollars more for the same product, but you know, as somebody that's been working on it, I'm okay paying the higher amount because I understand the value that I'm getting and I'm paying for that value.
You know what, Marky, and what you're paying for is the value of the product, but also for the experience, right? I feel that, you know, no, I didn't do much shopping on Boxing Day. I don't like to go buy things on sale because the experience is affected as a result. And let me tell you something interesting about that is, like, when you have a wealth mindset that's dialed in, you know, experience is important to you, because let's say you save 20%, but you come out, you know, you had to wait 30 minutes, the employee didn't know anything, and it kind of upset you. It disrupted your balance. It disrupted your high energy vibration. Well, that 20% that you saved is going to cost you huge in your ability to manifest and how your day goes, you know, and if you're making big decisions trading, you don't want to feel anything but positive. So 20% off of something you're going to consume could cause you a day's worth of negativity if you don't know how to handle that reaction. So really, it isn't about money. It's about experience. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't understand that until I made a little bit of money, Mark. I didn't understand the value of experience. I always wanted to have these experiences, but I still allowed price to dictate the way I would behave. And now I'm just looking for experience. And when you're experience focused, funny enough, you get the best deals and best price anyways. Yeah. I don't know how it works out.
Exactly. But it's very similar to trading in a sense, because you're not chasing the market, if you will, and the market being those, you know, inflated prices. Exactly. So I know the value, like going back to your point, Georgie, you know, you're saying if you get something for 20% cheaper, maybe the quality is not there, right? So reflecting this back to the home gym setup I'm looking to build, right? I'd rather pay a higher sticker price knowing that I can rely on the products that I'm getting, right? I wouldn't want to be doing deadlifts and have the plates just break down on my toes, right? Because then now I'll have to fix my toes, which is going to get me out of the game for a while. Plus, you'd have to likely replace the product. And if you don't, if the company you bought from doesn't have a good refund policy, doesn't have good customer service, guess what? You're going to have to likely get a completely new set. So you're out of pocket. Is like the price you pay for lesser quality stuff, it doesn't make sense as far as experience. And the other thing I'll mention before we kind of get back on track is from the experience part, right? It's, for me, the cost of it is not as important as the benefits, right? So sure, there's a sticker price, but you got to look at it from the investment, you know, from the investment part. And I guess this also comes from my background, you know, studying finance and working in a bank for a good part of my life. But when I consider this, it's like, all right, I'm looking to spend a couple thousand dollars building this workout gym. What are the intangible benefits that I'm going to get, right? What are the things I can't really put down as, you know, put a price figure beside? And for me, that's mental health, right? For me, working out, I have like my mental health is a lot better when I'm able to work out. And I generally find that when I'm investing in myself, investing in my mental health, everything else kind of falls in line, right? My performance as it relates to trading falls in line. My, you know, my day-to-day, whether it's relationships, whether it's spirituality, everything kind of anchors to my mental health. And working out is what gives me that energy and gives me that good mental space. So, you know, a couple thousand dollars, is that not worth having those benefits? Right?
Absolutely.
So that's where I'll leave that on. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to end it with this, and I'm not going to elaborate blab too long about it. Warren Buffett quote, price is what you pay, value is what you get. And I think this discussion summarized really well by that. I'm not even going to unpack it. Just think about that for a second. Price is what you pay, value is what you get. And I want you to think, who's responsible for getting that value out of the product? The person that creates it or the person that buys it? How many treadmills are sitting under couches, right? So let's move on. I think it's a nice detour. I liked it. and let's find our way back to the path here.
Of course. In the interest of value for you guys, let's get back on here. So we've discussed relationship with money, kind of how the beliefs around money are formed, and giving you guys a chance to kind of reflect on your own experiences with money, you know, some of the lessons or beliefs that you were taught and that you're currently holding on to. Because right now we're going to shift over into discussing what a financial thermostat is. And then we're also going to discuss how it manifests in the lives of traders. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. You know, Georgie kind of briefly skimmed this topic at the beginning in the introduction.
I stole your thunder is what I did. I didn't realize you're going to go this. You know, maybe I should review the notes a little bit more.
We share the thunder.
Right? Yeah, it's your idea. It was your notes. And I just went in there and stole it. I got to give you credit.
It's all good. So guys, what is a financial thermostat? You know, Georgia briefly summarized it. Your financial thermostat is very, very similar to that of a regular thermostat that you'd have in your homes. All right. And I'd say for 99% of the audience listening to this, you know, you're in a position where you likely have air conditioning in your house, right? So this is going to be something that you can relate to. So how does a thermostat work? Well, the thermostat is basically set to keep your room temperature within a certain range, all right? The thermostat will regulate the temperature automatically and will kick in to ensure that it always remains in that preset range. So if you take a moment to think of your financial thermostat as the amount of money that you're comfortable with or the amount of money that you've kind of set for yourself, all right? And this is going to be interesting because a lot of people's, I actually like the fact that we went into the spending discussion because that perfectly relates to what we're going to go on here. So not off the tracks as much as we thought. Perfect. Right? So if you think of your financial thermostat as the amount of money you're comfortable with, right? Let me give an example here. So let's say the average American makes around $36,000 per year.
Is that how much it is?
This is what Google says, yeah.
Wow.
So okay. Around 36K per year, which means, you know, if you break this down into monthly figures, that comes out to around $3,000 a month, right? Now, another interesting statistic is that most Americans, I think the last time I checked, it was around 70% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, all right? So let's say, for example's sake, the average American has a financial thermostat where the upper range is around $3,000, which is what you'd get on payday, all right? And let's say the lower end, you know, we won't drop it down to zero, but let's say the lower end is somewhere around $250, all right? So if you kind of relate this back to your own spending habits, let's say you get paid. When your bank account rises above that certain thermostat level, the upper range of your thermostat, maybe you get a larger bonus than you're expecting, you find a way to blow that cash, all right? Once you get that paycheck, you feel on top of the world, all right, I'm rich, you know, honey, we're gonna go out for dinner, let's do this, let's do that. You find a way to blow that money. Whereas on the opposite side of that spectrum, right, when your bank account drops below the lower range of your default setting as far as it relates to the thermostat, you start to work harder, all right? You start to get a little bit tighter with expenses, with things going out. Maybe now you're looking for better deals. Maybe now you're looking at, you know, going to the grocery store and looking for the chicken that costs, you know, the chicken that's on sale or whatever you guys like to eat. You tighten up expenses to bring your thermostat back up, all right? So if you reflect on your own experiences with money, does this hold true for your habits? Take a moment to really reflect on that. All right.
Yeah, man, this is such a good example, Mark, like with the figures and stuff, because when you have more money, like you mentioned, 3K is your set point, let's say, and you have 5,000 in your bank account, 3,000 is your set point usually because that's what your expenses are, right? It's like the bare minimum. So your expenses are gone. You got $2,000 of extra money. You view it as extra money. There is no such thing as extra money, right? But you say, hey, I got extra $2,000. You start looking for things to buy that you weren't even going to buy. Like you never even considered buying them before. Now you're only looking at them because you got the money to spend. And none of those times will it be, let me buy some shares in something. Let me invest it. You know, you're looking for ways to blow it. That's such a good word. Like, you know, just get rid of it because you're not supposed to have it. In your mind, consciously, you have $2,000 in excess. Whereas an individual who's got a higher set point, that $2,000 is already earmarked. instead of having a 3,000 set point and say, you know, I need to invest 2,000 a month, I have a 5,000 set point. And so I think if you look at it as an excess, if you ever thought I got extra money, those are words that you could look to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm sabotaging here. I'm letting go of money that I should be keeping.
Exactly. And so another great example of this is lottery winners. All right. There is another statistic. I don't have the exact figures. You guys know like 90% of statistics are are not accurate. But nonetheless, a majority of lottery winners end up giving back, or not giving back, but a majority of lottery winners end up right back where they started after several years. I think the actual figure is something like 18 months or something like that for them to go from winning the money to being right back to where they were before they won that money. Yeah, Georgie?
I just pulled the stats.
Okay, we got fact checks.
Yeah, so this is according to the National Endowment for Financial Education. I don't know their credibility and what they're doing, but get this. 70% of lottery winners end up broke, and a third go on to declare bankruptcy. So after winning the lottery, not only do you lose everything that you had in excess, you spent the amount that was your survival money. You blew everything. Think about what a psychological change and damage happens for that to take place. You know, that's wild, man. Sorry, keep going. I just want to bring out those stats because the third going bankrupt is very interesting.
Exactly. And so to kind of relate this back to what we mentioned about the thermostat, right? So if your upper bound is $3,000 and then you win the lottery where, I don't know, what would be a conservative? Let's say you win $20 million. All right. Let's say of that, you keep 10. All right. So let's say you get $10 million and your upper bound is 3,000. What do you think you're going to do with the remaining, you know, 9,997?
Lambos, cottages, females, drugs, something like that.
And that is exactly how you end up as a statistic, right? Yeah. Because lottery winners never worked on increasing their default settings on their financial thermostat. Okay. And really the level of your financial thermostat is what is going to determine your level of wealth. Now, going back to this example of lottery winners, right? The level of your financial thermostat may gradually expand over time. And that's what our goal is with this episode, to help you expand that over time, you know, with, you know, nice slight gains here and there as you increase the default settings, but seldom, and I'll say this again, seldom, if ever, does your financial thermometer expand rapidly, all right? The faster that your financial thermometer or thermostat expands, the more volatile the fluctuations between the upper and lower bounds of the range. And I think this is case in point for our example of the lottery winners, all right? They go from maybe a $3,250 upper lower limit. Now they've got, say, $10 million. All right, that's an extremely quick, expansion of that financial thermostat. So you might have 10 million, but you know, to your subconscious, you know, 3,000 is that upper range. So you're gonna do whatever it takes. And again, this is what we said in the beginning: your relationship with money is gonna dictate your habits and your behaviors, and whether you like it or not. Whether the decisions you make are for you or against you, it is all based on your relationship with money and the default settings in your financial thermostat. All right. So, yeah.
You know, that's why I like the word thermostat, Marky, because people aren't surprised to know that below the minimum amount they need of money is uncomfortable. But a lot of them do get surprised to know that above their minimum amount is also uncomfortable, right? And so you got to understand, if you want the temperature to be a certain degree in your household, if it's below, you're uncomfortable. But if it gets above it, you're uncomfortable too. So the thermostat's job is to cut off the heat when it reaches the temperature, even though it could give it more. It doesn't, because that's where your set point is. That's the important part, is a thermostat could be adjusted and it cuts off abundance whenever you get to the point you're at. It's got more capability, but you're just setting it there.
Exactly. That's a perfect point. And just to bring it back to trading, right? If your money beliefs are such that you associate money with risk, with scarcity, and danger, you know, while logically you're striving to make more money, can you guys now see how this misalignment can really create a conflict between what you think you want and what you actually believe you deserve?
That's a beautiful question. You know, wow.
That's food. Yeah, that's some food for thought for you guys, right? So I hope with this last section here, you know, we might have kind of beaten the hammer a little bit too much, but the end goal with that was to help you guys realize that, like Georgie said, everyone is familiar with their lower bound because that's where it gets uncomfortable. But the realization we hope that you're making here is that there's also that upper bound. And if you guys have been trading for, you know, any amount of time, and any time that you seem to, you know, you seem to get that breakthrough that takes you to where you think is going to get to the next level, and then for some reason, maybe you self-sabotage, maybe you start taking trades you're not supposed to, now you know why. It's because your financial thermostat, the upper bound of that financial thermostat, is set at a range lower than what you're logically trying to accomplish.
And this happened to me, yep. Marky, like when I first started. Like I had this plan. I worked on it. I was trading Forex at the time, XAU USD, contract for difference pair. So yeah, you know how it goes. So I was sitting there. Mr. Goldfinger. Gold member. I love gold.
I love gold.
But yeah, so I created a strategy. I did all this stuff. I put in all the work and effort. When it was making me the amount of money I was making at work, I was happy. It's like, oh my God, this is fantastic. I see freedom. When it started making me more money than I was making at my safe 9-to-5 job, I started to say things like, oh man, I'm getting lucky. Oh, like, you know, maybe there's something, I'm overseeing something. How could it be this easy? You know, when is this going to change? Oh, this is short term. Like, those are the kind of thoughts that came out. And it wasn't a difference in the strategy. It was a difference in a set point of money. Yeah. You know, and that's when I said, holy crap, this industry isn't about knowledge. It's about stretching your comfort zone on a psychological level and perception of money, right? Because the amount of money I make is good for me compared to where I was. It's not good enough for the future me, and it's definitely not good enough for Jeff Bezos. I always say if Jeff Bezos made what our whole company did every single day in a year, he'd be broke. And you have to understand that, you know, thermostats could be adjusted. So let's jump into this next topic, because this is where it gets interesting for trading.
Exactly. So, you know, Georgie kind of segued it beautifully there with one of the examples of how your financial thermostat kind of manifests itself in the lives of traders, right? So in his example, you know, once he started reaching profits that were above what he was making at the 9-to-5 job, that suddenly became, you know, an issue that he had to work on in order to kind of level up, right? And for him, it's because, you know, he's been doing personal development. He's the one that got me into personal development. So you have to get to a place where you're aware enough, and we're going to speak on the strategies to help you adjust your financial thermostat shortly. But you ultimately have to get to a place where you're able to see those thoughts objectively, all right? Because if you feed that energy into it, you're going to be exactly where you are right now. And really the beauty about life is that anything you see at this exact moment, you know, be it your current situation, be it, you know, because we're a trading podcast, let's call it your bank account statement. All right. If you look at your bank account statement today, that bank account, whether you're proud of what's in that, what's proud in that statement, or whether you don't think there's enough in it, that is all based on what your actions were previously. All right. What you can accomplish today, starting from the now, you know, that's in the future tense. So if you're seeing your bank account balance, for example, and that's maybe making you upset, you know, you believe you deserve more, you can simply just tell yourself, all right, this is not my future. This is a reflection of my past, my thoughts and beliefs that led me to this. Going forward, you know, you can start using your positive affirmations. That's going to be a different discussion that we'll get to shortly. But another one of the examples of how, you know, the financial thermostat really manifests itself in the lives of traders, and I guess this would be the most direct example, is in your position sizing, all right? And so position sizing means that if you're trading position sizes that make you emotionally uncomfortable, then what you're doing is effectively putting yourself in a position where you're too scared to trade, because you don't want to lose that money. So what you do is you scale it back, or you don't trade at all, because that puts you back into what? Into safety, right? You're getting, your subconscious mind wants safety because it associates, you know, big dollar amounts being at risk with fear, with scarcity, right? And so if you don't trade, or you lower that position sizing, now your subconscious is getting what it wants, which is certainty. All right. And, you know, on the flip side of that coin, if you're trading too small, and you don't often see this, but this is quite often, you don't often see this in traders. It's often that they're trading too big a position size. But, you know, for the small few, this will hold extremely relevant. If you're trading position size that's too small, then you're not going to be as engaged emotionally. And this can lead to sloppier executions. You might start straying away from your plan. And the reason for that is simply because the monetary results don't really motivate you. All right. And so it's really a fine balance that you have to find where the position size you're taking has enough of a monetary reward to motivate you, but isn't such a size that you're scared of actually trading. Because anytime that you're fearing that you feel emotions or fear starting to creep in, that's your subconscious mind telling you, all right, you know, this is not aligned with what I'm trying to do. And really the other kind of portion or other way that it manifests itself in your life is self-sabotage. All right. And self-sabotage, you know, we've kind of discussed this quite often throughout this podcast, you know, throughout these episodes, but it's especially relevant in this case with your financial thermostat, because like Georgie said, this is very relatable to Georgie's original insights on his experience, was that you might get to a stage in your journey where you're starting to actually make money and you build up somewhat of a profit cushion. All right. And so at that stage, you might be above your current financial thermostat range. And as a result, you might tell yourself that, you know what, I've built up a decent profit cushion. I can take more drawdown, so I'm going to start trading bigger. All right, you decide to increase that trading size, you take on more risk, and you start looking for larger monetary profit targets. All right, and so by doing that, if you don't achieve the results that you want, right now you've taken additional risk, you're taking higher position sizes, but you're not really achieving the results that are required in order to take that larger amount of risk. So that's kind of the two main ways that it manifests in your trading, is in the position sizing and in self-sabotage. When you do eventually get to the point where you're breaking that upper bound of your financial thermostat, and the only thing you have to do is adjust those default settings so that they reflect, you know, your current, your now.
You know what, Marky? Like those are the two things, the account destroyers, if you will, position sizing, self-sabotage. When I was trading at first, I experienced these things, and my solution was to look for ways to improve those things. Like, I want to do a position sizing guide. I want to do like rules for discipline, you know, but here's what I understood. This took me a long ass time to understand this. And like, I'm so happy to be able to share this with you. You know, these position sizing, self-sabotage things are not a problem. They are a symptom of a problem. And so when you're addressing the symptoms, you're going to create more of the problem. You're ignoring the problem and more symptoms will come. That's why it seems psychotic to have a position sizing grid, risk discipline, all these things that you have in front of your computer and you don't follow them. The reason is it's like taking pills. The pills aren't going to help the cause of your problem. All right. And so to me, when I realized that, it was game changing, because I said, what is the problem? All right. And the problem was the thermostat. It's mismanaged expectations and low self-worth, or a financial abundance mindset. And those are the things that were game changers for me, because, you know, I'm going to get vulnerable here for a moment. When I first started trading, you know, I came from a place where I hustled. Like, I tried to do whatever was possible to make money. You know, I got to tell you guys, I've done some stupid stuff that I wouldn't admit on the podcast, like some incredibly stupid stuff that, to be frank with you, I'm in some ways I'm lucky to be alive. And so I look at this thing and I'm like, look, I lost friends in this battle. You know, I've done what I had to do, and thank God I've gotten through it. Not once in my whole life have I been the S word until I started trading, and that's scared. Like, honestly, Mark, I've never been scared of anything. I'm like, bring it on, let's do this. You know, push came to shove. I was ready to go to town on whatever. Trading was the first time that I experienced fear in my life. Do you know what I mean? Like, when I was opportunity focused. Like, you know, if there's a problem, I can fix it. If there's money that needs to be made, I can make it. If there's something that needs to be gotten, I'll get it. It's just a matter of how. When I started trading, I was scared. And not just the regular level of scared, really scared. And when I got scared is when I started making more money than I did at other things. And, you know, and it's like you weren't scared of losing the money because I didn't have much. I was scared of making it. I was scared of succeeding. And this is oftentimes a problem. And we did a podcast on this. What was it, episode 58 or something?
Yep, episode 58.
Once you finish this, go listen to that one because these two go hand in hand. That's why we split it by one, just to mess with you a little bit. But I just wanted to mention that is that these problems, trading-wise, position sizing, self-sabotage, they're not a problem. They're a symptom of your real problem. So you have to address that first.
Exactly. And so, you know, Georgie, thank you for sharing that. I personally know the background and yeah. I know you would have done anything to get to where you are. So I'm glad that you're here today with us and we can be hosting this podcast.
We had to fight for it. We all have to fight for our success and to be the best version of ourselves. You know, it means different things to different people. I'm not proud of it, but you know, there's stories.
And you know, to Georgie's point, this is kind of off the topic of the show, but there was a quote, or if you guys aren't familiar, you know, diamonds, one of the most beautiful things in the world. Guess how they're created? Pressure.
Yeah, but
pressure makes diamonds, right? So ultimately, you know, when your back's against the wall, the only way you can go is forward. And, you know, the unfortunate reality is you got to get outside of your comfort zone. And whether that means your back's against the wall or, you know, whatnot, you got to keep moving forward. And it doesn't have to be a sprint, you know, one step at a time, but we're giving you guys the practical strategies to help take those steps and keep pushing forward.
One thing I want to mention, because I know the listener's mind might be going rampant on what I said, Marky, is that, you know, I would always do things in the interest of like my family making money and being successful. I would never hurt people. Like, I was always an empath and compassionate. Times where I should have, I didn't. Not just physically, emotionally. You know, I just like, it just doesn't feel right to me. I've always kind of been like, you help other people. You don't hurt other people. But that was the extent of my statement. I don't want you guys to look at this and be like, oh my gosh, who am I going to for trade education? I just more meant like I did what I had to do. And sometimes it wasn't fun. You know what I mean? That's all I meant.
Definitely. And so let's get towards the tail end here of this episode. It's been a bit of a longer one, but we appreciate you guys staying on. And I think this is where you're going to get, if you haven't already got the value, the gold nuggets, this is where you're going to get, you know, the real nuggets. And, you know, maybe if you're tuning in at this point of the episode, I'd suggest you start off at the beginning. But nonetheless, the strategies here, you know, as people, we tend to like to skip things to get to the point that we want to hear. But with that comes missing the context. And I think it's important to get the full context before the strategies, because it's not going to make sense the other way around. So practical strategies to help you guys adjust your financial thermostats. And again,
a list.
And again, complete transparency. You know, these are things that I'm working on as well. You know, I would imagine George is working on as well. Right, we're all working on these things. You know, if you keep the financial thermostat at the default setting, you know, you're not doing your life's purpose, which is to grow. So
yeah, I'm constantly working on this stuff you're about to talk about, Marky. Like, your car's not going to go fast if your foot's not all the way down on the gas pedal, if you're not filling it up with new fuel. You're going to run out.
Exactly. So the real goal with adjusting your financial thermostat is to uncover the limiting beliefs, and ideally as many and or all of them, that are living in your head, which are responsible for hindering your prosperity. And you got to challenge them. And you got to challenge them so that they no longer reflect you, right? It's kind of like, in a way, crime. All right. If you see, and the way that I'm going to try to bridge this, let's see if it works. But let's say, for example, let's say, for example, you're walking by on a busy downtown corner and you see somebody, you know, hacking away at a bike lock. All right. If you see somebody hacking away at a bike lock, just look at them as you're passing by and do nothing. They're probably going to continue doing what they're doing. Right. But then maybe you notice that, and then you mention, I mean, again, this is, you know, pre or post COVID times. You find somebody else on the street, you say, hey, what's this guy doing? What's this guy up to? Maybe we should confront him. Do you think now that several people looking at this person trying to steal a bicycle, do you think he's going to continue doing what he's doing, or is he probably going to stop and move on, maybe try to get a bike somewhere else? All right. And hopefully that came across correctly, because that is what you want to do with your limiting beliefs. All right. You got to shine a light on them. You got to challenge them. And the only way to get to really shake out those limiting beliefs is to challenge them. You know, like that example of, you know, the heroic bystanders trying to save that bicycle from getting stolen. Right.
You connected those. That worked. You pulled it off.
Thank you. So the first step, all right, I kind of skimmed over this near the beginning, but the first step in adjusting your financial thermostat is awareness. All right. You've got to be aware of a certain situation, right? So whenever a certain situation around money, involving money, comes up, take a moment. Take a moment to observe your thoughts. Take a moment to observe your thoughts as if you're a third party. Now, this is going to sound a little bit woo-woo, but literally anytime a situation involving money comes up, literally see yourself outside of your body, looking at yourself, all right, observing these thoughts, and become aware of that become aware of that thought or that feeling. When you think about material things you desire, what kinds of feelings come up? All right. And you can ask yourself some of these questions. What kind of feelings come up when you think about material things and money? Do you feel like you deserve these things? All right. And those are two simple questions that you can ask, right? Ask yourself, maybe it's a material thing you want. You know, for me, I want the gym, right? So do I feel like I deserve it? Yeah, I feel like I deserve it, right? But for you guys, ask yourselves these kinds of questions. Maybe there's something that you've always wanted, but you know, maybe you've got that limiting belief that, you know, money is the root of all evil. So you're not wanting it as much, or you don't believe you deserve it because of that limiting belief. So take a moment, really see yourself outside of your own body, looking at yourself, observing these thoughts and asking, you know, why do I feel this way? Why do I have this belief? That's the first step, right? That is awareness. And by becoming aware of the thoughts that you're having, you allow yourself to identify effectively where your default setting is on your financial thermostat.
I love it, Marky. You know, like, I love the example you used. You brought it all home. awareness to me is one of the most important things, because if you're not aware enough or self-aware enough to know what is going on, then you could fall for anything, right? You know, if you're not self-aware to know what is going on, how do you know what changes are going to amount to what result? You don't have a feedback loop really to tell you what you're creating. And so I think, you know, self-awareness is the first starting point. I've actually done a lot of self-discovery through awareness, through Buddhism, through these ideas and concepts. I'm not a Buddhist, but I like to pull from the Buddhism, you know, values and systems. And the very first thing is awareness, wholeness, oneness. And I think no matter who you are and where you're starting in your journey to personal development, we can always work on this. I think this is huge. It's a starting point for anything.
Exactly. And so after you become aware of your thoughts, of the beliefs that you hold around money. Now, again, remember, guys, this is not strictly financial, but this is more focused on financial. This also applies to other areas of your life. Right? So you can change these questions around to kind of relate to the different areas of your life. But for our purposes, we're discussing really the financial thermostat. So the second step, once you have gone to the point where you're self-aware, where you can identify these thoughts and question them, right? Challenge them. The next step is to change how you speak to yourself. Who would have thought, right? So once you become aware of these thoughts, right? If you believe that you don't deserve something, challenge that belief, right? Ask yourself why you believe that, or really a personal favorite, why are you arguing for your limitations?
I love that one.
Where have we heard that before, right? So that's actually something that I picked up from George. George often tells me that, and you know, I've really adapted it into my own life, in the sense that we often have these stories that we tell ourselves and that we believe, right? And then we live our lives based on these stories, right? The story could be something like, oh, I'm not patient enough to trade. Oh, I'm not good enough to make money. Why are you arguing for those limitations? You have to challenge yourself, right? And so remember, guys, that your limiting beliefs, they're deeply ingrained. And while on the surface, they might seem like they're against you, right? Because they're sabotaging what you want to achieve. the real purpose of those beliefs, you know, back when they were imprinted on you, was to protect you. All right. Your money thermometer might be set really low without your knowledge, like we said earlier, because your relationship with money might be that of disappointment or resentment, right? You might have had an experience where, you know, getting money led to disappointment, led to resentment. So your brain understands that, it takes that. And then what it does is it will protect you going forward, because in the past it saw that money always brought you pain. Right. So going forward, that's going to be your default setting. Anytime you come into money, you're logically going to do stuff that doesn't seem logical to you, but at a subconscious level, it's going to be as a means to protect yourself. Right. And this is really where self-sabotage comes from. So the way that you can kind of change this thing around is the next time you have a positive experience with money, reinforce it. Use positive self-talk. Let's say, for example, going back to the example of that bank statement, right? Let's say if you open your bank statement and there's money in the account, right? It doesn't have to be a lot. Give thanks, all right? Show gratitude for the money that you do have, because without being grateful for what you do have, how can you attract more of it, right? And so the next time, for example, like there's a card that I've been looking at for some time, the Jaguar, as Georgie will well know.
Let's right? get it.
Every time I see it, there's one on my street here that drives by. Every time I see that car, I say, yeah, I deserve that car. I want that car and I deserve it, right? And it's by doing these little things. We did an episode on positive self-talk. I'm not quite sure what episode it was, but if you guys go through the directory of episodes, you'll see one on positive self-talk. And again, you know, you've got something else to listen to after you finish this one and episode 58.
Love it, Marky. Love this all. You know, with self-talk, one of the things in addition to the podcast you guys could check out is I wrote this book. I thought it was important to know story and journey. And through my story and my journey for my career, I ask you guys questions, give you exercises at the end of each chapter, develop your own. And it's called Path to Profit. You get on Amazon. It was bestseller in investing and online trading, futures trading. It hit bestseller category, or hit bestseller in the categories. And you can get your copy, or you could just go to the website. If you go path2profitbook.com, you can get on the email list and get a copy of the workbook. And one of the exercises is a thought journal, you know, and how to change your negativity and thought patterns into positive patterns that serve you and help you get to your goals. So check it out. Get the copy of the book if you want. If not, just get the workbook and see if you could do it without it. I don't know, to be honest. I don't remember. But, you know, it's a chapter and exercise, and it's really powerful. So I just want to throw that out as a resource for you. The book isn't priced for profit. Funny enough, it's called Path to Profit, but the profits aren't from the book. I priced it pretty reasonably. Amazon charges a lot for producing single copies. So yeah, check it out. That's one thing I just want to mention. And yeah, I'll let Mark carry on with the next one.
And we'll also make sure to add the respective links in the show notes. So if you guys are interested, just make sure to scroll on down to the bottom of the show notes page to the resources tab, and you guys will be able to find that if you're interested in it. So we've covered two, all right? The two practical strategies so far is number one, awareness, becoming more self-aware of your thoughts, your opinions, your beliefs about money, your relationship with money. And then after you become more aware of that, is to start challenging them by changing how you speak to yourself. And really the third one here is visualization, all right? And so this one is really great. I actually did, you know, on a personal note, I did a, you know, great 5-year planning strategy with George. And one of the things that I was responsible with putting together was a vision board. All right. And so a vision board is basically something that you put together. It's a compilation of pictures of, you know, anything that inspires you or motivates you, right? This could be pictures of wealth. This could be pictures of income, you know, material goods, anything that represents wealth, all right? So for some people, it could be a new house you'll find with, you know, your trading profits. For others, it could be a car, right? But that's not enough. Just having that picture there is not enough. The visualization aspect is you're going to want to effectively live in those pictures, All right. You're going to want to feel yourself, let's call it in a car. You're going to want to feel yourself sitting down in that car. You're going to want to visualize the smell of that car. You're going to want to visualize shift. I mean, I love driving manual cars. Unfortunately, it's a dying breed, but you're going to want to visualize yourself shifting gears. You know,
paddle shifters, baby. Still got those?
Not as fun as the manual.
Definitely not. Not as fast. Well, it's faster than the manual, actually. I used to think that my shifting is adding value to the process. It's really not. It slows it down. But anyways, yeah, I agree. My last car was a standard, and I really miss it sometimes.
Yeah, right. And so you're going to want to live those pictures, right? Whether it's the car, whether it's the house, you know, for some people, it might be a picture of a private jet, right? Maybe chartering a private jet. You're going to want to live in that experience. And the more that you kind of practice that, the more you're attracting that into your reality. All right. And so, take a few minutes every single day. You really want to find a quiet place, and this will also bode well with your morning routine. All right. And so make it part of your morning routine to visualize the things that you put onto your vision board. And as it relates back to trading now, right? So these are some general kind of grandiose goals of what you want to achieve. As it relates to trading, imagine yourself making 10 times the profits you're making right now, all right? Maybe if you're not making profits, imagine yourself making the profits that you want to achieve, that you believe you deserve you achieve. Imagine then what you would do with that money. All right, imagine buying that car. Imagine being able to afford those experiences that you want to have. You don't even have to imagine it because you're already worthy of it. It's just that the fact that reality hasn't caught up to, you know, to what you believe you deserve. And it's just that little misalignment between the subconscious and the logical beliefs. Another thing you can do for traders, you know, imagine a check with your name on it for a huge amount. A big amount, whatever you consider to be big. And don't go small on these things, guys. Don't go based on what you think is realistic. You know, this is your no limits. No limits, however much money you want. Imagine there's that check with your name on it for that amount. Imagine getting that check. Imagine depositing it. Imagine what you would do with it. All right. No matter which way you go about it, build that picture up and make it really, really compelling. Because the more realistic you can make those visualizations of them on a daily basis, the more likely it is that you're going to practice living in it on a daily basis. And like we said, with practice, you start to become more acclimatized to that feeling, to that wealth. And what you're going to be doing by, you know, following that three-step process of awareness, speaking to yourself positively, and visualizing, is that now you're going to remove those small mental barriers. You know, you're going to remove those limiting beliefs that you previously had, and you're going to help increase the default settings on your financial thermostat to really help you get to your path of, you know, larger trading profits.
Marky, I just want to mention this. I'm going to read a dictionary definition, and you guess the word. Ready? Fun little game. The faculty or action of forming new ideas or images or concepts of external objects not present to the senses. What's that word?
Meditation.
Close. It's another Asian ending word.
Another Asian.
And you're building an image.
Visualization.
Close. Imagination. And you know what's crazy? This is the one skill that we're telling people to do, basically. And this is the one skill that their parents told them to, you know, quit dreaming, get your head out of the clouds, go do something proper. You know, like, I think imagination is a lost art, and I don't think you should ever lose imagination. You know, my head's still in the clouds. You know, it's like when I read the forecast, I usually make a joke. I'm like, that's not for me. I'm above the cloud. It's not going to rain there. It's like... You got to have that. Like, imagination isn't a bad thing like your parents taught you. Keep dreaming. Keep thinking, because imagination is manifestation. And imagination is visualization. It's meditation. It's all the same thing. You know, you're just creating a reality in your head before it exists. But what you create in your head is what will exist. And so, you know, that's a good way to kind of end it off for me. I really had fun with this episode.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we can get the production team to cut it, make it look like I made the right choice on the first shot.
Yeah.
But we're not going to do that because that's just how we roll. All right. And so, you know, further on to what Georgie said, you know, from my own experiences, it's been the case, and it continues to be the case, where anytime I kind of share my ideas or my motivations for the future, you know, with, especially with parents and family, you know, they always tell me to, you know, come back to earth, come back to reality, right? That is what it is. I don't believe that I deserve to be, you know, sub average. I believe that I'm above average in my own rights. And that is what I carry on to. That's what I give energy. Because if I give energy to, you know, other people telling me I can't do stuff, guess what? That's what I actually believe. And that's what my reality is going to reflect. But if I continue on with my own thoughts, believing in what I believe I deserve, the only way for me to go is up. And so that is ultimately what we've got for you guys with today's episode. We're right on time here for our regular amount. And what I want to say to you guys, if you've made it this far, is thank you. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. If you guys can think of maybe one person or even a network of friends that are particularly interested in trading and that you might think would find value from today's episode, please feel free to share it with them. All right. If you guys enjoy this podcast, we put in a lot of work to put it together and bring it to you guys. And we'd appreciate if you guys can jump on iTunes, throw us a rating or review. And until next time, good luck and good trading. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.